Welcome back to another episode of the Bison Report radio podcast. I am Ryan Burns, the producer, the publisher of BisonReport.com, and joining me, as always, is one of the first and foremost experts in all of Bison football, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. Had a, kind of a heart attack style weekend this last weekend against Northern Iowa. It was a lot of consecutive emotional victories over North Dakota, South Dakota State, and then Northern Iowa. Now things are maybe going to hit cruise control a little bit more and possibly be a little bit less stressful.
How fun was that fourth quarter to watch? I know that it was a little bit stressful, as you said, but the points were flying, and Carson Wentz, I mean, what more can you say?
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular. I mean, as far as drama and, high-quality offensive football, that was impressive. That Bailey for Northern Iowa is actually a former Big Ten guy. He played at the University of Illinois. They wanted to move him to a different position because he's such a good athlete. He kind of threw a fit and said he wanted to stay a quarterback. That's how he ended up at UNI. And that guy is incredible with the ball in his hands, especially on that zone read that they're running. But at the end of the day, you can't give Carson the ball last or you're not going to win the game.
Absolutely. I mean, he was so impressive on that final drive, especially on a couple of fourth down conversions, I believe. And then that picture perfect pass into the end zone there to win it for Darius's second touchdown of the day in between two defenders. What a throw and what a catch from the redshirt freshman.
Absolutely. He's been extremely impressive. He's dealing right now with a little bit of a shoulder injury. It seems like, he missed part of the first half against Northern Iowa, part of the second half against South Dakota State. But he really appears, and NDSU's a team that does a lot of rotating skill positions. They'll bring in some heavy personnel with a lot of tight ends. They'll spread it out and bring in some wide receivers. But it seems like at crunch time, Shepard has cemented his position as the third receiver out there with RJ and Zach Braw, and that doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon because that kid is an absolute playmaker, which is extremely impressive for a freshman, redshirt or not.
All right. So let's to start things off to really look at the UNI game. Let's start with Carson. 26 of 40, 335 yards, four touchdowns, and two surprising interceptions. How would you assess Carson's day overall?
This was really one of the more roller coaster performances, honestly, out of Wentz. He also lost a fumble late in the fourth quarter that some of the more pessimistic Bison fans just assumed ended the game. Northern Iowa ended up taking over around midfield and then actually missed a shorter field goal attempt to give NDSU the ball back in a little bit over 2 minutes, but for a kid like Carson to turn the ball over three times is extremely rare. But then on the same day, he sets a career high for passing yardage, 335 yards. The four touchdowns are obviously very impressive. Two of them were kind of dumps. Jedry Sear got his first career touchdown on a little fullback release. And then Polisek, you made note of this, Polisek drew up a really cool goal line play to just get Jeff Ilias out in the flat and get him the ball and get into the end zone. But the two touchdowns to Shepard were NFL-level throws, and they were extremely impressive. He's a very, very good player. This was not one of his more efficient games. You and I always talk about this, his statistics not being gaudy because he'll complete such a high percentage of his throws. The yardage total will be down. He'll also, run for a good amount of yardage, and their run-pass ratio will be to the point where he can't throw for a bazillion yards, but today he did. He threw for a bazillion yards, and he also was the team's leading rusher, which is just super impressive.
Absolutely. He's a guy, He's a guy, Ross, and I hope NDSU fans, as we're talking about before we started recording here, can just really appreciate, because it's not every day that you get a quarterback as great as Carson Wentz is. And I truly mean that as a guy who also covers the Golden Gophers down here in the cities. It's when you see a quarterback who's as talented as Carson is and who looks so natural making these tough throws time after time, it's something that I hope fans can really appreciate for the rest of the season. I mean, would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%. And it's funny, too, because, you know, the Bison have always been such a run-first team as far as their quarterbacks are concerned. There have been some good quarterbacks, even just in the Division I era. Steve Walker was a good player. Brock Jensen had a cup of coffee with the Miami Dolphins. I mean, he was a good player, too. But as far as just a physical specimen, nothing close to Carson Wentz. So you'll hear fans, you know, sometimes in conversations or guys that I'm sitting by question some of his decisions to make the throw, you know, those the seam throws against cover two when they're running twin verticals where he sneaks it in behind the linebacker in front of the safety, or the far hash deep out, you know, that only two or three guys in college football can make. It makes Bison fans nervous because he has such a hose. Normally, you know, he's committing like cardinal quarterback sins that just don't matter because he's got a rocket for an arm.
Yeah, that is for sure. All right, so let's move on to the running game. I mean, to me personally, after rewatching the game, it was a little bit concerning that the running game did have a couple of issues. There were 40 attempts for 141 yards only, so it's less than 3.5 a carry. And if you take out what Carson did on the ground, they're less than 100 yards on 28 carries. I understand that Carson had a huge day, and he's you know, the passing game is the reason the Bison were able to stay on track. But do you have any concerns about these running backs?
Yes and no. I mean, King Frazier, he's a kid that went to the University of Nebraska out of high school. And then, you know, due to some excellent recruiting by the Huskers, he ended up with some really highly touted kids that were younger than him, jump him on the depth chart. So he transferred to North Dakota State. King's a good power runner, but he's not the fastest tailback, and he doesn't make a lot of guys miss. Now, he had a very good game against Montana, and he's an extremely useful player. But the issue is, and I think you'll see this as the season kind of progresses, Bruce Anderson is the best running back on the team, and he's a true freshman. And that's where I think you're going to start to see the carries start to go to Bruce, even though he is a true freshman. Plus, it gets a chance, gives the crowd a chance to yell Bruce after every carry, which is a lot of fun in the Fargo. But he averaged 5.7 yards a clip on 7 carries, and he's been doing that all season. As things shift towards Bruce Anderson, and as the offensive line gets a little bit healthier. This was Zach Johnson's first game back. He's an All-American left guard, and you know he's been dealing with some injury stuff. And they lose Austin Kuhnert during the game. I have to put in Zach Seymour. When the line gets a little bit healthy and more of the carries start to go to Bruce Anderson, I think you'll see that. I think you'll see that average go up. Also, let's give credit to Northern Iowa. They're a very good team. Their two losses are to FBS teams. I mean, that's a good program. Always seems to give the Bison fits, but King Frazier's more of a Sam O'Jury type runner who is a very useful runner and actually spent some time in the CFL. Bruce Anderson has that John Crockett type level talent, and actually the Missouri Valley player that Bruce Anderson, every time I talk to a guy who's seen him play or you know any type of scouting situation, The name I always hear is David Johnson, the former Northern Iowa Panther that now is scoring touchdowns on Sundays for the Arizona Cardinals. Everybody says that Bruce reminds him of David Johnson. So that's, I'm not saying he's going to the NFL. I'm not saying that he is David Johnson. But right now, from what I've seen in person and on film, Bruce is the best tailback on the team, and he's going to start getting more of the carries.
So what you are saying, again, is that you anticipate this running back by committee to keep shifting, and it wouldn't be surprising here in a couple of weeks if Bruce Anderson is eventually outstaffing King Frazier. Am I getting that right?
Right, and then, you know, Lance Dunn is going to continue to be involved. He had an injury and was not able to go. He was actually in streets during this game, and he's certainly part of the rotation. Lance is actually the fastest athlete on the team. I've heard that. I've heard Coach Kleiman say that on a number of occasions, just in time speed. You know, Lance Dunn is actually the fastest player that they have on offense. So he's going to continue to be part of the equation. But, man, just going back and watching some of Bruce's stuff on film, it's extremely impressive.
Absolutely. And speaking of extremely impressive, let's talk about these wide receivers. RJ had a huge day, 5 catches for 109 yards. Darius had a huge day, 3 catches, 61 yards, 2 touchdowns. And NDSU is now new leader in all-time receptions is Mr. Zach Raw, pitching in a nice 5 for 53 on the day. What were your thoughts on these receivers being able to get open against this UNI secondary?
You know, RJ is such an unbelievable kid. And you know, to come in as a true freshman last year, I don't know if you've ever seen the last drive in the national championship game a year ago against Illinois State, but he came up absolutely huge, and he just continues to do so. I was talking to Trevor Gebhardt, who's a guy who I actually did a feature on before the South Dakota State game, and when I asked him what makes RJ so good, and he goes, you know, I can't even tell you. He just, this is going to sound so dumb, is what he said, but he just catches the ball. And I completely understand what he's saying. He's not the fastest kid on the team. He's certainly not the biggest kid on the team. But he finds holes in zones and makes subtle little cuts when he has the ball in his hand and just catches everything that's thrown to him. And it's extremely impressive. He's a clutch type of player that Carson looks to in late game situations when the pressure's high. And I'm extremely impressed with RJ. In the same way, I'm also impressed with Darius Shepherd for different reasons. Darius Shepherd is electric. I think he's one of the most athletic guys on the team, especially maybe not from a long speed perspective, although he's not slow, but his quickness is unbelievable. The moves that he makes with the ball, not like a lot of guys that I've seen at North Dakota State, reminds me of Ryan Smith a little bit, but Ryan was 5'7" or 5'8", and Shep is around 6 feet tall, and so I can see why they're using him on punt return. He's just electric with the ball in his hands and starting to really prove that he's not just the guy that you get the ball to in space, because, you know, the first touchdown was an incredible seam route, double team, gets drilled in the back of the end zone, slides into the back of the Fargo Dome and maintains possession for the touchdown. And then obviously the corner out in the game winner, he makes a perfect adjustment, catches the ball in between two defenders, makes a catch, and the crowd goes absolutely ballistic. And the kid's 19 years old. I mean, you just have to be impressed with what Shepherd's been doing. As far as Bra is concerned, everybody knows his story. Sixth-year senior, true freshman year, broke one collarbone. Redshirt freshman year, broke the other. And then, you know, basically his sophomore, which obviously with this extra year of eligibility year turned in his freshman year, ever since he has been able to get onto the field, he's just been incredibly consistent. Maybe not as explosive this season as he has been in the past for Brock Jensen and honestly for Carson Wentz in his first year too. Vrau was a deep threat. You don't get to be a school's all-time leader, and by the end of this season, he'll be the all-time leader in everything, by, you know, running short to intermediate stuff, which is what I think you've seen out of Zach, at least in the 2015 season. But he's been extremely impressive. Big guy on third downs. The 4th-and-8 conversion that he caught on the sideline from Carson, obviously, if he drops that or he doesn't run the right route and he ends up short of the stick, the game's over and they lose and they fall to 3-2 and 1-1 in the Valley, and there's real issues. I mean, Vry is just one of the greatest receivers in the history of North Dakota State. There's no question about it.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. As you said, you know, all-time leader in receptions. He'll probably get yardage again this week. And for a kid, a fifth-year senior out of the state of Minnesota here, I don't know what more you can ask to him holding so many different records here for the Bison. So let's move on to the offensive line. Obviously, the big news of the week is that Coach Kleiman addressed it in his press conference on I think it's Monday or Tuesday that Austin Kuhner will be out for probably 2 weeks. Zach Ziemer stepped in against you and I. Do you have any concerns with the kid from Lakeville stepping in now?
I don't. I mean, I don't have a great deal of understanding of what his training level is with the center position. That's the only, you know, position that you usually view as is not just completely interchangeable. Usually tackles can slide inside to guard. If you got a really good guard, often they can play at right tackle, but there is something to be said about snapping the ball and making the checks at the line. So there's always at least a little bit of a level of concern when you're making a replacement at center. For a long time, the Bison had true centers, which is Josh Colville. Joe Lund was a very, very good player. Jesse Hines was a guy that played center his entire career. And it seems like now they've just gone to recruiting offensive linemen and kind of figuring it out later, because Kuhnert was a starting guard last year's championship team, and he's sliding inside to center. Ziemer, I think, played tackle in high school and then slid into guard when he got to North Dakota State. Now he's playing center. You always have a little bit concern, especially with how often NDSU likes to run jet action out of the shotgun. You want to be able to make sure that the kid can snap it. And I mean, I understand how simple that sounds, but it's a real concern. Other than that, I think Ziemer's a very good player. I think he's an extremely talented athlete. He was highly thought of out of high school. Has been through, obviously, his I believe he's been through his redshirt year and his redshirt freshman year in the strength and conditioning program, which at NDSU is legendary. So I have very low level of concern with Zach Ziemer being able to contribute physically. It's just the mental end of playing center that I'm not very sure about, though he seemed to not have an issue on Saturday afternoon.
Speaking of concerns, Ross, how concerned do you think South Dakota is this weekend having to face Greg Menard? The kid has been on an absolute tear. The last three games, the sophomore defensive end Greg Menard has 7 tackles for loss and 4.5 sacks. And this past Saturday, he had 5 total tackles, 3 for loss, and 2 sacks. What can you say about Mr. Greg Menard, Ross?
Well, I mean, I'm just blown away. And I actually wrote a piece for the Bison Report that came out Tuesday morning describing how blown away I am. Last year, I wrote that last year's defense might have been the most dependent on one player during the Division I era at NDSU. That team got more out of Kyle Emanuel than any defense had probably relied on one player in the history of Bison football at the Division I level. Kyle had over 25 tackles for loss. He had 17 sacks. Everything that they were able to do on defense had a ton to do with the fact that Emanuel was completely collapsing every single play from the quarterback's blind side. That obviously, when you have to try and replace that, creates a level of concern about the defensive end position. Now, Greg Menard and Brad Ambrosius are two guys that, because of a lack of depth at defensive end and an injury situation with Mike Hardy, either last year or the season before that, had to step in and become part of the rotation. They were good rotational players. But coming into the season, you had to say, you know, there are 17 sacks that we have to somehow make up, and maybe not, you know, actually needing to get to that number, but there's a ton of pass rush, and there's a completely new set of safeties, completely new group of linebackers. How do you fix that? How do you fix the pass defense? Do you have to blitz? Or, you know, are they going to have to blitz more? Are they going to have to play more man? What is going to have to happen? And then Greg Menard just takes all those questions and throws them out the window. I mean, completely playing basically like a man. And he is the same type of body style. I think Kyle might possibly be an inch taller, but both of them are those 3-4 outside linebacker, 4-3 defensive end hybrid type guys that you put on the weak side of a 4-3 defense, and he's just absolutely collapsing against, you know, collapsing the weak side of the offenses that he's facing. I have honestly very rarely seen a left tackle be so destroyed as the kid that starts out at left tackle, whose name is escaping me, from South Dakota State. And it wasn't just on the 2.5, 3 plays that he gave up sacks to Menard. He honestly couldn't block him. I mean, it was unbelievable. And then that got carried right into the Northern Iowa game. The play that he got that big sack on that you made the gif of, is his initial punch was incredible. Puts the guy on skates and then just closes on the quarterback. And, you know, imagine if he was a redshirt freshman instead of a true sophomore and there were 4 more years of this kid playing right defensive end. The way it is, we still get to enjoy him until 2017. But talk about a fantastic player and just a fantastic get for this coaching staff out of the Lakeville area.
Absolutely. I mean, speaking of that play, it's not every day you see a kid who's only 240 pounds giving such a devastating first punch to a guy who's given up 60 pounds on at least, and literally putting that guy on skates. A guy who's 4 inches taller, 60 pounds heavier. It's not something you see every day, and it's something that you hope that Greg, only being a sophomore, can continue to build on. And another guy that you brought up earlier is Brandon Brozius. He's another guy who's probably benefiting a lot from all the attention that Greg's getting, and he had a pretty solid day on Saturday as well with 6 tackles and 2 tackles for loss. What were your thoughts on his gameplay?
You know, he's such a solid player, and the way that this defense is run, it's always been, you know, that weak side defensive end gets all the pass rushing love because the left end or the strong side end is doing his job. For years, that was Cole Jerick and Colter Boyer setting up Kyle Emanuel. Now it's Brad Ambrosius setting up Greg Menard. The reason, obviously, that Brad is playing left end is because he's 30 pounds heavier and 2 inches taller than Greg. I mean, that's how you formulate a 4-3 defense. But he's a very impressive kid. Like I said, he had his red shirt burn his freshman year. He's a guy out of the Green Bay, Wisconsin area that came into the program and immediately contributed to a national championship team. They don't have a ton of depth at defensive end right now. I don't have the snap counts in front of me, but Ambrosius and Menard play a ton throughout the course of a game. Redshirt freshman out of Bismarck, Stanley Jones, is rotating in with those guys a little bit. But NDSU likes to be, you know, too deep at both defensive line positions. They like to rotate 8. Right now they're kind of rotating 6.5. So we'll see how that goes as the season progresses. But right now, with Schatz, Tangway, and Steidl inside, and Jones, Ambrosius, and Menard outside, this defensive line is absolutely dominant. And as much credit as Greg Menard is getting, and rightfully so, because he's playing like an animal, Brad Ambrosius deserves a little bit of that too, because he's been very, very solid.
Absolutely he has. And another guy that's really impressed me is former Mr. Football of 2014 in Mr. Robbie Grimsley, the true freshman defensive back there, who was really thrust into, you know, some serious playing time, starting with in the Montana game. And he was the leading tackler for the Bison on Saturday with 10 tackles and a sack and a tackle for loss, plus a pass broken up. I mean, what did you think of the true freshman, Mr. Robbie Grimsley?
It's, you know, it's been a learning experience for Robbie. Right now he's rotating in with Chris Board, who is just an absolute physical freak as far as a specimen is concerned. I can guarantee you that in the history of North Dakota State athletics, they have not had a safety who's 6'1", 220. I mean, that's just, you know, those guys that are 6'1", 220 play linebacker at North Dakota State. And so Chris Board right now is playing all the rundowns, passing situations. Robbie Grimsley, who Chris Kleiman described his training camp as basically perfect. Like when they came in for fall camp, Grimsley was flawless, so they had to burn his red shirt. And so Grimsley rotates in on passing downs. If the defense comes out, or if the offense comes out with 3 or 4 wide receivers, more often than not, Pierre G. Tucker, who's a linebacker, comes out, and Chris Board comes out, and then Jalen Allison comes in at corner, and Robbie Grimsley comes in at safety, and that is who operates in the nickel. And the reason that I went the long way around to explaining all that is to tell you how impressive it is that Grimsley would lead the team in tackles, because he's only playing a fraction of the snaps. Now, part of that has to do with zone read, where in that defense, often the safety has quarterback responsibilities because the weak side end and the weak side linebacker are usually following tailback. The safety comes up and cleans up quarterback if he keeps the ball. That has a lot to do with the fact that Grimsley, you know, had led the team in tackles. But like I said, it was a learning experience. You know, he had a lot of Bison fans nervous because he didn't play particularly well against Montana. And then the Weber State, that long 76-yard touchdown pass to tie the game, and kind of obviously that game ended up being a blowout, but at the same time it made people nervous. That 76-yard touchdown pass was on Grimsley as well. He had inside help for C.J. Smith. C.J. Smith let the guy go, and so did Robbie Grimsley, which was not okay because then the guy was, you know, going up the left sideline for 76 yards and a touchdown. That said, yes, he's been fantastic. He's shown a little bit of pass rush ability. I think he's extremely fast, which is important at the safety position, and he'll be a guy that, along with Trey Dempsey and Chris Board, you know, these kids are all very young. I think the oldest guy is Board, who's Board and Dempsey are both redshirt sophomores. So this Board, Dempsey, Grimsley defensive backfield is here to stay, and I think that there's a lot of potential there.
And what were your thoughts on C.J. Smith's day? I know that you've been very high on him as a lockdown corner for this team. He had another interception, but he also, you know, the third play of the game there. Well, we won't talk about that one as much, but he did have an interception and a pass broken up. What were your thoughts on C.J. Smith's day?
Yeah, that Darius Fountain is a very good player for Northern Iowa, and he just absolutely toasted C.J. on the third play of the game. I don't know if because of how well first and second down went, C.J. was looking in the backfield and trying to make a pick or make a play, but he got beat deep and then missed the tackle, and Fountain went in for a touchdown, and that happens to the best of them. After that, he kind of put the clamps down on his side of the field. He made an absolute highlight reel interception. You made a gif of it, and you know he used the sideline as a defender and then completely took away the inside from the receiver, made a diving interception. That was a huge play in the game. Turned the ball over. You know, if he allows a completion there, you have a possibility of 21-3 UNI. I don't think they're coming back from that. But after that, you look at the stat sheet, and he only had two tackles. That's fantastic for a corner because that means that you're not giving up completions. He had a pass breakup besides just the interception, and yeah, he was a very, very impressive player on Saturday afternoon after giving up the touchdown. Ryan, let's take a quick step into your domain and talk recruiting for a minute. You told me pre-show that there were a couple of guys taking visits this week for the South Dakota game. Talk about that and any other recruiting news that you might have for Bison Nation.
Absolutely. So the first two official visits of the 2015 season are here now. So the Bison, we'll have two guys on official visits. One is a defensive tackle, Cameron Hackle. He's a three-star kid from Bayport High School in Wisconsin. And the other is from South Florida, and Felix Dixon from Countryside High School down in the south part of Florida there. Cameron is a kid who is going to be a defensive tackle. He's 6'3", 260 pounds. He doesn't have any significant offers of yet. His biggest offer to date, I believe, is probably, I wouldn't even consider South Dakota being a huge one, maybe SIU. He's got interest from Northern Illinois. He's really waiting on a Bison offer. He's a kid who came to camp this summer. NDSU is holding off. What he told me is that the staff has told him he's the number one target at the defensive tackle position. They already have a defensive end and Braylon Lund, a kid from North Dakota there. And they want potentially Cameron to be their guy at defensive tackle. While he doesn't have an offer yet, I think it could be close. And if it happens this weekend, I wouldn't be surprised if Hackle takes another couple of visits to really compare to NDSU, but then make a decision from there.
Sure, I think that NDSU took three defensive tackles in last year's class, so it's not surprising to me that they're kind of trying to zero in on one guy this season.
Absolutely. They only do want one, from what I've been told. They're just trying to find the right guy. And especially with the amount of guys they took last class and with NDSU trying to figure out if Cameron's a full offer guy, is he a 60, 70, 80% offer guy, that's going to have to be decided this weekend, and that's going to be an interesting conversation to see what they say. Another guy is Felix Dixon. Again, this team needs some help in the secondary in this class. Felix does not have an offer yet either, but that could be close as well. He's got two offers so far from Alcorn State and Southeast Missouri State. He's heard from NDSU a lot in the last few weeks, and this is why they've obviously set up the official visit. Felix is a kid, Ross, who I think, if he does become offered, I think he could be a very quick commit. He was talking to me yesterday, and we were talking about his recruiting, and he was expressing his feelings to me how people have told him to wait, but he's also got some backlash from that, saying if you wait too long, that spot could be gone, and the school that you want to go to fills up. You're tough out of luck. So he knows that. He's excited. And how many times have you heard this, Ross, where a Florida guy likes the cold? Have you heard that? I mean, I don't hear that a ton, but I mean, not many kids from Florida are saying, yeah, I'm excited, you know, looking forward to seeing what Fargo's about, and I like the cold. And you just kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit and say, all right, it sounds like this is the kind of kid, the kid that Bison fans should be, you know, excited about. So both guys, Cameron and Felix, two top targets, one in the secondary, one on the defensive line. So it should be interesting to watch what they do and what happens this weekend if they both become offered. And if they do receive offers, will they commit? And you know that the Bison Report will be all over that, so no worries there. So
yeah,
we get
guys from Florida. I mean, Trey Dempsey, Chris Board, yeah. Get guys from Arizona too, Jordan Champion, but I don't recall any of them using the cold as a reason to come.
You know, some people are just a little bit different. And if he's a guy that, you know, likes the cold and wants to embrace it and wants to get away from home, which he told me he does, it sounds like Fargo is probably the spot for him. But, you know, I don't know how much we have to say about the game coming up this Saturday. Obviously, the Bison take on South Dakota. And the line from Vegas, Ross, is that the Bison are 28-point favorites at home. Do you see, I mean, is there any chance that there's an upset brewing in Fargo this weekend, or what are your thoughts?
No, there really isn't. I mean, obviously, and Coach Kleiman's been very easy to kind of discuss this, or he's wanted to make this a discussion point. No letdown. I mean, three huge games. Obviously, University of North Dakota isn't very good, but at the same time, that's an important game. That's a rivalry game. They had to get up for that. Then they have to get up for the Dakota Market game against South Dakota State. And then they had to get up for SportsCenter coming to town and had to get up for Northern Iowa. Played an absolutely hellacious game, an emotional game, a big victory. The concern obviously then is about the letdown. At the same time, South Dakota just isn't there yet. I have a lot of respect for their head coach, Joe Glenn. He has a ton of respect for the North Dakota State program. But there just hasn't been a competitive game between USD and NDSU yet. In the Division I era, I have a hard time believing that that's going to go through a great deal of change at the Fargo Dome. I mean, I don't usually have a lot of concern going into any game at the Fargo Dome. South Dakota just isn't there yet. And I don't really think that this game is going to be competitive. I think the fact that the Bison are laying 4 touchdowns should tell you something. I mean, I might even take the Thundering Herd, to be honest with you, at that level. I think you could see NDSU's defense put the clamps on and keep the Yotes between 3 and 10 points, and you might see Carson in the offense, and honestly, you might see Easton Stick, too, get into that 40-50 range. So, I'm not trying to be a homer here. At the same time, they're just not there yet. South Dakota just isn't good. They won some non-conference games against lower-level FCS opponents, but are winless in Valley play, and neither game was competitive.
So what you're telling me is, as I'm asking for your game prediction here next, that you're not seeing a super competitive game on Saturday afternoon, and that, you know, the Bison should come away easy victors. And, you know, start looking forward to Indiana State on the road next weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Bison fans, go to the tailgate. Enjoy yourselves. Enjoy a stress-free Saturday. I mean, obviously every Bison home game is fun and something to enjoy, but this one just probably isn't going to be super competitive.
All right, so what's your score prediction? I'm guessing I'm going to go I'm gonna go 41-10. I think that Carson gets it done through the air early on, and that Easton Stick gets to get some, you know, time here late in the third quarter, fourth quarter, and you get to see some of the reserves. So 41-10 Bison. What are you thinking?
Yeah, 41-10, 42-7, 45-3, something in that. It won't probably get into the 50s. I mean, when it gets into the 50s, it's really out of hand. But the 40s are, you know, this is a 35-point offense in a normal game. They scored 31 against Northern Iowa. They had to run the bejesus out of the ball and fumble it a couple of times to only score 28 against South Dakota State. This is an offense that if not given a whole lot of resistance from the other team, is capable of scoring 41 to 45 points very, very easily.
Yeah, and all right, so there shouldn't be too much concern from either Ross or I. So, again, we thank Bison Nation for listening to the podcast here at Bison Report Radio. We thank you. You know, if you want to check out the great work that Ross does covering the squad, you can go to bisonreport.com. If you have any interest in recruiting, I can guarantee bisonreport.com as well is the place that you should go. You know, we do a lot of great work there covering the team. And if you, you know, like what you hear and you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow the Bison Report at NDSU on Scout, me, Ryan Burns at Ryan Burns MN, and Mr. Ross Uglum at Ross Uglum. So again, we thank you guys for listening. Go Bison.